This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, it is the evening edition with Uma, Ezra and Richard. And today it's that time of month for Charita Rock and Roll, and it's a good one.
And of course, let's make this no secret. Tomorrow is going to be a significant day because Metallica arrives and performs in Malaysia at Stadium Merdeka. You can't miss it. And we have to talk about Metallica tonight. We have to.
That's right. Okay, I'm sorry. Let's just put this in perspective. It's not just Metallica. Mm. It's Metallica in Stadium Merdeka.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the fact that they've been touring every nook and cranny across this globe for, you know, the better part of 30 years. They haven't made it to Malaysia ever. And they actually even put it on a special posting on the website. We've toured a lot of places. We've been to Moscow after the wall came down.
Yeah.
They've never been to Malaysia. So this is a first for them. It's going to be a first for us. And there are a lot of love for Metallica fans out there, for sure.
There are indeed.
Well, you know, Ezra and I were in line very, very early to buy tickets outside Fahrenheit 88.
Yeah.
I remember just looking at your tweets and your Instagram pic. You boys looked so ridiculously excited.
It was crazy. It was 7:30 in the morning. I was, you know, maybe within the first five people in line. And, you know, within an hour, there were just lines across the building. And, of course, this is indicative of their popularity, their longevity, their success as a band, their music. So there are many, many things to talk about Metallica, which unfortunately we can't cover in its entirety because we're talking about music, we're talking for them as a brand, we're talking about that annoying band who brought down Napster. We were going to talk about you know, them putting all their feelings and emotions on the table through the lens of a documentary.
Yeah.
And of course, now in 2013, they've got this new movie coming out. The one thing that we wanted to focus on was, I guess, you know, in the early days, you know, they're going through guns blazing with Kill 'Em All, Ride the Lightning, Master of Puppets, these amazing revolutionary metal albums coming on this new wave of British heavy metal. But then Cliff Burton, their bassist and one of the, you know, key members.
Ups and dice.
Yeah. And he dies on tour. There's a bus accident, and you know, and that's it.
I mean, effectively, he could have died on the pick of a card. You know, he picked out the Ace of Spades from what it was. They were on this tour bus. Him and Kirk Hammett had a bit of a discussion. You know, and he wanted Kirk Hammett's seat, or rather his bunk, and he did. And unfortunately, the bus crashed.
Yeah,
killing Cliff Burton. Could have been Kirk.
That's
Hammett.
Just. Insane.
It's
story.
A proper rock and roll story.
It's
right?
A proper rock and roll story, but you know, band members come and go. But the significance of him as a musician, as a member of Metallica, is quite significant. Here's a clip by Flea of the Red Hot Chili Peppers talking about Cliff Burton.
Cliff Burton was an outstanding, superb, deep, and wicked virtuoso of a bass player. In rock music, the majority of bass solos you hear are self-indulgent, overly technical, show-offy, and mostly kind of boring, you know. Every Cliff Burton bass solo I've ever heard is a soulful, psychedelic, head-banging expression that rocks your world, trips your brain out, and gets the house rocking. A beautiful piece of music played by an awesome rocker of a young man, a masterpiece of a human being. And when I hear him play, I hear a dude that knew his shit, a serious musician who delved into it with all the love and passion that is obvious in his playing. The worst tragedy that could ever happen to anyone, in my opinion, is that when they die, they never sang their song that was inside of them. They never gave the gift that was inside of them. But the beautiful opposite of that is that if you pass away and you know that you sang your song, you gave your gift, which is what Cliff Burton did, then that is the greatest accomplishment that I could ever hope for anybody. The space that he created in the history of music will last forever. No one else can ever fill it. He was one of a kind, and I can never listen to any Metallica record without thinking of him. It is clear that the gift he gave lives on in that band's music, be he live or be he dead. And I say, God bless Cliff Burton, he rules.
That was Flea of the Red Hot Chili Peppers talking about the deceased member of Metallica, Cliff Burton.
Those feels, man.
It's such a poetic tribute from Flea as well. And you know what? It holds true whether he was dead or alive. The man was a genius.
Yeah. And, you know, it's
He was a... Hold on. He was a rocker that would, you know, thrash out wearing a pair of bell bottoms.
Mm. That's right.
Yeah. Absolutely. And he was, you know, he didn't play with the pick. You know, he was playing with his really long fingers. But this is the interesting thing. You know, Cliff Burton passes away. Metallica is just on the cusp of, you know, making it. They recruit another bassist, Jason Newsted, yeah, who becomes a very, very long partner with Metallica. But, you know, the relationship isn't, you know, at all very smooth. It's quite turbulent, in fact.
In fact, when he was brought in to record on And Justice for All, he didn't even meet the band when he was recording the whole thing, you know.
Right.
They brought him in. The band had already recorded their pieces. They said, okay, come in, record your stuff, directly input into the stuff. So that's what he did. He turned up at the studio, played his pieces, and went home. He hadn't even met the band properly, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
You know, that's like that old story even with Van Morrison and Astral Weeks, right? Yeah. Apparently, Van Morrison was such a diva that nobody actually wanted to play with him in the same room. and it's amazing how great records get made that way.
Yeah, I mean, despite all the tension, you know, that exists within the band. So I guess the role of the bassist, I guess within context of Metallica, it's very, very strange because, you know, you have the core members of James Hetfield, Lars Ulrich, and Kirk Hammett. But, you know, the issue of the bassist from the moment Cliff dies, you're going after Jason Newsted, he leaves because he's dissatisfaction with the band. And they have, their current member, Robert Trujillo, who's got this legacy of playing with Ozzy Osbourne.
That's right, yeah.
And all
suicidal
these other players.
Suicidal tendencies.
It almost reflects the different stages of their career. We're going to play...
Ooh, what's the first song?
We're going to play, in tribute to Cliff Burton, we're going to play an excerpt of Orion, which is coming from the Master of Puppets album. He wrote this particular segment, which is basically the most melodious part of the song, and I guess an essential bit of listening for Metallica fans. This is Orion from Metallica, Master of Puppets, right here on Treat to Rock and Roll, BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is the Evening Edition's Treat the Rock and Roll, and today we're talking all about Metallica in light of them performing at Stadium Merdeka tomorrow night. I'm Uma. I've got Ezra and Richard here with me today. Another major, major point in Metallica's history, I guess, on their influence in the music industry was this massive, like, rock and roll lawsuit against Napster.
This must have been 1999, 2000.
Yeah, 2000 was, I guess, the filing of the lawsuit, or when it all came to heed.
Yeah,
right?
and so this was a big, big milestone, because Metallica at this point are commercial giants. The Black Album, which was released in 1991.
Actually, let's just point out, they are the most popular, most successful heavy metal band in history.
Yeah, and that encompasses, you know, every aspect of the music industry, not just the music, but, you know, the accolades and the commercial brand value that they hold. And so I'm just going to read to you the first paragraph of Lars Ulrich, the drummer of Metallica, who's sitting before the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee and explaining to them what happened. And he goes on to say, Mission Impossible 2. We were startled to hear reports that five or six versions of our work in progress were already being played on some US radio stations. We traced the source of this leak to a corporation called Napster. Additionally, we learned that all of our previous recorded copyright songs were via Napster, available for anyone around the world to download from the internet in a digital format known as MP3. Keep in mind, this is 1999, 2000.
Yeah.
You have to explain it to the old folks. In fact, in a 48-hour period where we monitored Napster, over 300,000 users made 1.4 million free downloads of Metallica's music. Napster hijacked our music without asking. They never sought our permission. Our catalog music simply became available for free downloads on the Napster system. And so that essentially sets up the whole debate about music, about ownership, about property, about digital distribution.
And it's all Lars Ulrich's fault.
You know what?
It's not Lars's fault.
You know what's interesting about Napster and all of this stuff is, first of all, a lot of, I guess, pundits do credit Metallica for the downfall of Napster because the lawsuit cost was so high that Napster couldn't sustain it. And eventually they just had to file for bankruptcy and ran out of money. Now, to put some context, Napster, LimeWire, there were all these file-sharing tools back then, but essentially that's what they did. It's you know, whether you were on a university network or a global network, you just kind of ripped your own music and shared it with the world.
Richard, what were your thoughts on this?
My thoughts at that time, you know, I kind of lost a lot of respect for Metallica as a band. You know?
Did you really?
I really did, yeah, because, I mean, at that time, you know, like you say, it's 1999, 2000, the internet's coming into its own, it's becoming its own thing of this huge force of nature, and you've got this band who you've respected for a long time coming in saying, you know, well, you can't do that. And all of a sudden I'm like, well, why not?
And this is really, really interesting, because now we have Lars Ulrich here speaking to Charlie Rose on PBS talking about this whole drama.
In essence, it's about control. It's really about controlling what you own. You know, we clearly own our own songs, we own the master recordings to those, and we want to be the ones that control the use of those on the internet. That's it in essence. So we are going after Napster legally, in the legal form, but at the same time, which is becoming increasingly important to us is to try and get this debate out into the public forum, to try and make people understand what's at stake here and what the ramifications are if this is not something that's dealt with and sort of guided into some sort of, with some sort of parameters that makes the artists, the service providers, and the fans out there happy.
What's at stake?
What's at stake is really the control of it.
Okay, an artist's right to own and control his
control,
own art.
Yes, that's what's at stake for us right now. At the same time, this is something that changes every 15 minutes with the advent of another technological wonder. So you can only sort of try and trail right behind where technology is going. But right now, what's at stake is controlling that and trying to set some parameters for the future.
You've got such deep pockets. Music has been so good to you. You've
Absolutely.
Made so much music that so many people love. Why worry if a few people get a few free copies?
Well, it's really not. I mean, right now, it's not about the money. It's really about the control and about the future. The money that's being lost right now in this revenue is pocket change. It's really about, to me, the core issue is sort of people's perception of the internet, people's perception of what their rights are as a internet user and in how it relates to intellectual property. You got the most extreme people sitting right now going, anything that comes through the internet, through my computer is mine to own and I have the right to it. And that type of train of thought, I think, is very, very dangerous. It does not just affect musicians, it affects anybody who creates any type of original work. And that is something that really has to be dealt with. This thing that people take it for granted, that because it comes through the computer, through the internet, that they have a right to it. It's a very, very dangerous
position. You think this is the first step on a very slippery slope?
Yes.
That will lead to the artist losing all control.
Yes, and not just musicians. All artists who create anything from scratch, absolutely.
Lars Ulrich talking to Charlie Rose. You know, you got to remember, this is the early days. There's no iTunes, there's no Spotify, there's nothing. And no one had set the platforms yet. No one had invented the platforms. The only thing they had come up with was, this was pre-BitTorrent, file sharing, right? And, you know, recently, of course, Sean Parker, founder of Napster, and Lars Ulrich sat down with Spotify, because now Metallica's on Spotify, they're on iTunes, they're on everything. And it's understandable, because now there's a formalized platform on which they exist, where money gets around to all the right people who want to get it, and so on and so forth. And even Ulrich admits a certain amount of Luddism to his thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I see, so I don't blame him, Richard. I mean, in the sense that he comes from, like, nobody knew what the internet was doing back then,
I understand, but, you know, they had to drop that lawsuit, because They were kind of tarnishing their Band of the People image.
Yeah, from where they came from to what they were fighting for. But
you know, these were street rockers. You know, this was about sharing and taping music.
And suddenly it becomes full circle. But I guess the eloquence of, you know, what they fought for and to where we are today in terms of how we share music, the option is there, you know, to legally download music, to share it. And of course, we haven't even spoken about the moral ethics of sharing music. And it's really fascinating where it's gone and where it is right now.
So we're going to leave you with the song itself that started all this trouble, I Disappear, from Mission Impossible. Possible to Metallica on Treatha Treatha Rock and Roll BFM 89.9. Good evening, I'm Uma Paganampake Pagan.
And I'm Ezra Zayat.
And I'm Richard Bradbury.
And today we're talking Metallica on Treatha Treatha Rock and Roll. They perform in Stadium Merdeka tomorrow night, ladies and gents.
Every time you say that, I've got goosebumps.
Goosebumps.
I mean, you know, I've brought all my Metallica shit. I mean, in my closet. But
are you going to change mid-concert?
Well, no, the problem is I can barely fit most of them because they've been... I don't know if it's reflective of t-shirts shrinking over time or
sure,
just my
that's
waistline.
It.
Just
that's
my
it. Waistline. They magically shrink over time.
That's it. They do. They produced them in different sizes back then as
that's
well.
That's right. Yeah. And so the next thing that we want to speak about is a bit more playful, a bit more fun. Not so much for the band, simply because at this point in time, there's the success of Metallica and the machine that is Metallica is quite significant. But James Hetfield encounters a significant battle with alcoholism.
Mm.
And, you know, he goes into therapy and the band doesn't quite know how to deal with it. And, of course, the record label is also very concerned of, you know, losing the band because they don't want... A record label never wants a successful band like Metallica to break up.
No.
And as a result, they get into this whole situation where they can't really communicate. They're down to three members because Jason Newsted has just
quit, yeah.
Just left the band. And so here in this next clip is just an example of James Hetfield and Lars Ulrich talking about how to write a song and how to make it sound better. But this is clearly at the heat and the peak of their
tension.
Yeah, here it is from the documentary Some Kind of Monster.
You're saying this so you can get your point across about doing a drum beat. I mean, you know, it doesn't hold any water.
To you.
It doesn't.
I think it's stock. Which part of that is unclear to you? I think it sounds stock to my ears. I mean, you want me to write it down? I think it feels stock,
I
okay?
Can't hear you.
So I.
When you say you're telling me what to play right now, you're telling me you should play with what Kirk's doing, and I'm telling you it's stock.
Dude, fine.
You know what, guys? Why don't we just go in there and just hammer it out, all right, instead of hammering on each other?
I mean, we're in moods, and we're not going to get anything.
All you
want
to do is pick
today.
A fight, and...
I don't want to pick a fight.
This is so silly. You're just sitting there going, I'm in a really pissy mood, and...
And I f***ing told you straight up that I was.
Right.
And what are you trying to do?
I'm not trying to do f***ing shit. You're just sitting here being a complete dick.
You're really helping matters. You're really good at that. I was straight up with you, and I told you I'm in a shit mood, and what have you been doing? Fucking picking at me all night.
Come on, guys. We got better things to do. Right?
Yeah, I do. I do.
That was Lars Ulrich, James Hetfield, and Kirk Hammett trying to be some sort of mediator.
Mm.
Yeah. And that was the pettiness of these multi-millionaire rockers.
But coming, you know...
Hashtag rock stars have problems,
exactly,
too.
Coming... If you've ever been in a band, you know how real that is.
Yeah.
You know, you're arguing over nothing. What do you mean my drum beat was bad?
Yeah.
I'm just hitting a drum beat. It's a 4-4 drum beat. What's wrong with it?
It's too stark to my ears.
You know, clearly Richard Bradbury was channeling there from a previous experience. But, you know, this next bit from the documentary as well is a clip from Jason Newsted, who's talking about these kind of issues, the issues that we just heard, and how they had to bring in a performance coach, basically a therapist who used to, I guess, manage some big baseball teams, basketball teams, NFL teams, to manage all the tension and to make sure everything comes into place.
At that time, the manager suggested that we have a psychotherapist come in, a man that meets with pro ball teams, you know, big ego, big dollar guys that can't get along but have to make some kind of entity flow so everybody else and everybody can make their money. And I actually said, I think that this is really f***ing lame and weak that we cannot get together. Us. Look, the biggest heavy band of all time, and the things we've been through and decisions we've made about squillions of dollars and squillions of people. And this, we can't get over this.
That was Jason Newsted talking about squillions of dollars. But you
he's
know,
a kid from the street. Come on, don't
but, worry. But isn't that fascinating? Yeah. Simply because keep talking about the Metallica Machine. They're not just a band anymore.
No.
They've gone beyond that.
And of course, that's what's really fascinating about all these kinds of bands. When you become the biggest in history, when you become this big, when you're suddenly your fortunes are tied into the fortunes of the record company, of the fans, and everything like that, you're too big to fail.
Yeah.
They won't allow you to fail. You can't fail. So you need a performance therapist to come in and be like, everyone, can we all get along? Talk.
Little things like, you know, James Hetfield being a member of the NRA and marching around and all that kind of stuff. You know, the record company are in there saying, James, you kind of need to tone down a little bit. You know, not all of our fans are Republicans, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a fascinating watch. And for those of you who haven't seen it.
Right. Even if you're not a Metallica fan and you're listening, you should go out and watch this documentary. Because for me, what's great about this documentary is it's one of those very real and raw documentaries. It doesn't feel forced like so much reality TV these days, right? What do we got to play?
We have, you know, we're trying to figure out what Metallica songs to play, and clearly some of them are longer than 5-6 minutes. But, you know, we're going to go into their more commercial areas because, you know, we talk about their success. This is Metallica's Fuel from the Reload album right here on Cheetah Cheetah Rock and Roll, BFM 89.9.
Good evening, I'm Uma Vagan, Amphike Vagan, alongside Ezra Zayed and Richard Bradbury. It's Treetha Treetha Rock and Roll, and we're talking Metallica, who'll be performing live in Kuala Lumpur, Stadium Merdeka, tomorrow night.
Too good. Too good.
So, among all of us here, I mean, we're all Metallica fans, but Ezra, of course, is the uber fan.
I mean, I'm a big, big, big fan of...
7:30 in the morning outside Fahrenheit 88. You're an uber fan, my friend.
That's pretty self-explanatory.
Fair enough. But, you know...
But, of course, that isn't the first time you stood outside... waiting for Metallica.
I actually had the opportunity to, some people say stalk. But
I love it how he immediately calls it an opportunity as well.
Yes.
You mean observe closely, right?
Observe closely.
Yeah.
It was 2003. It was winter in Vancouver, and I had skipped all my classes during the day.
We need some of that music with violins and stuff. <you know? laughs>
Because I knew that Metallica performing that night,
right.
And surely they have to stay somewhere, thinking a hotel.
did stalk them.
So I went through four hotels, thinking, do I see a truck? Do I see like long-haired band members? And I was about to give up after 2 hours of looking for hotels. And I finally found them at Pan Pacific. I just found like 10 other Metallica fans, and they were staying there. Managed to meet them, shake their hands, signatures. But of course, the first thing that a Malaysian would say when you meet these Uber stars, say, "Hi, my name's Ezra. I'm from Malaysia." I don't know why it came out.
It just comes out.
It just comes out. I wanted them to know that, you know, far, far away in the land of Malaysia, there were fans. But now, tomorrow, they're going to be performing in Stadium Merdeka.
Fantastic. So Metallica actually has a very interesting, business model, if you will. Like they're a street band, a heavy metal band, but they also, it doesn't really, they've done well to skirt that line between mainstream and Hollywood as well. So they've got a new movie coming out called Through the Never, mm-hmm. which is kind of a huge rockin' concert movie with like this fantasy narrative thrown in as well. And it's in IMAX 3D.
That's right. And this is Lars Ulrich talking about the film Metallica Through the Never.
Concert films have a tendency to kind of be, they always have a tendency to be filmed around a tour, and they become kind of afterthoughts. It's like, we've got 2 weeks left of our tour in Latin America, let's not forget to film it. But we kind of thought, wait a minute, if you flip it around, it's primarily a film, it's not about a tour, you're not capturing a tour, you're setting up a film shoot with an audience. So you kind of flip the whole ritual on its head. We felt it would be much more interesting if you kind of filmed from the inside looking out. So we always play 360. So the primary concert element is kind of up on stage filming out. And then this whole idea came up in the brilliant mind of Nimrod Ansal, who we hired to kind of be our creative, you know, partner in this. And then, you know, Dane DeHaan's character Trip and or his night and his escapades and all this crazy stuff that happens to him, but it sort of keeps, it's a parallel universe to the concert, you know, it takes place at the same time. But the primary thing that we wanted to accomplish with the concert part of it is that we just never felt that, at least in harder rock, that anybody had ever kind of captured what it's like up on stage. There are all these great films that, like I said, kind of, you know, it's great, this is what it's like to be in the audience, but what's it like to be up there, like amongst it, being sweated on and spit on and kind of in the thick of it, you know? And that's kind of with the concert part, that was the ultimate goal, was to try to bring the audience up on stage with us, you know, the film audience.
That was Lars Ulrich talking about the Metallica Through the Never IMAX 3D movie at Cannes.
All right, folks at TGV, you're the only people out there with IMAX 3D. You better be bringing this movie to Malaysia.
I think it's funny, though, that whenever that you need a sound clip, they always roll out Lars. You know, he's the guy that can just keep
talking.
Well,
he's the most articulate.
Well, that's true.
He's Danish.
Ezra, you know, as a huge, huge Metallica fan, does it worry you that this movie is being directed by Nimrod Antal? Is it Antal?
Yeah, Antal.
Who directed Predators.
Predators.
You know, does that worry you? And it's going to be in 3D.
You know, I'm as concerned as the next version. But, you know, I love the idea that, you know, he goes, you know, no music film has captured what it's like on stage.
The Inside Out is very, very cool.
I'm pretty sure Martin Scorsese would go, hey, I know a few things about filmmaking as well.
I'm really looking forward to that. You know what's more? I'm really looking forward to tomorrow night. Ezra and I are going to be right there, front and center.
Absolutely. And of course, for those of you who can't make it...
With every person making Ramly Burger in KL.
Calm down. For those of you who can't make the show, we have a bit of a treat right after this. Indeed. Choose to Rock and Roll. What do we have, Uma?
We have BFM Bootlegs, folks. As always, our very own live rendition of Metallica for one whole hour with clips of fans that we managed to intersperse. People we met while standing in line for hours waiting for tickets.
It's going to be fantastic.
These are hardcore fans. They've drawn in from Penang, from like Kota Baru,
from Pahang, yeah, Algeria.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Algeria. Fantastic stuff, folks. This has been Trita Trita Rock and Roll. We've been talking about Metallica, who are performing live in Kuala Lumpur tomorrow. Stadium Merdeka. Be there or be square. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.